Welcome to Glenn Neely's quarterly interview series. He is the founder of NeoWave Incorporated, which provides money managers and traders worldwide with detailed market strategies to enhance their trading results. Now, here is your host, Brandon Clay.
Hello and welcome to our program. I am your host, Brandon Clay, and with us today is the founder of NeoWave, Glenn Neely. Glenn is an internationally regarded money manager, trading advisor, and Elliott Wave expert. He has devoted over 35 years to advancing trading strategy and wave forecasting. Today, we're here to discuss the top five Elliott Wave trading mistakes. Glenn Neely, it is a pleasure to chat with you again today.
Hey, Brandon. I appreciate you getting this put on, line for everyone to listen to.
Glenn, it's a real treat to chat with you today. And I don't know if the rest of the listeners know, but you've been doing something like this for over 30 years with Elliott Wave and teaching other traders about Elliott Wave, other investors, analysts, and also developing your own Elliott Wave version known as NeoWave with a lot of enhancements. For the benefit of those traders, investors that are not as familiar with Elliott Wave, it was started back in around the 1920s by Ralph Nelson Elliott, correct?
The 1930s. After the crash of 29, he lost a lot of money, and then he got really sick and got bedridden, maybe because he lost a lot of money. and he studied in bed for years and started to notice repetitive patterns in the markets, sort of fractally repetitive patterns on all time frames.
Thanks, Glenn. Yeah, that helps. So Elliott proposed that these market cycles are resulting from investors' reaction to outside influence, or really the predominant psychology of the masses at the time. And he's finding these downward swings. They happen in repetitive patterns, and then he terms these patterns waves. Is that correct?
Well, wave patterns are... The various wave patterns are a reflection of different types of mass psychology, which would be the same as individual psychology, but with just a lot of people acting together. So, it's pretty rare for maybe a group of people to be manic or depressed, but it's very common for an individual to have those feelings, maybe, on a regular basis. So it's when the majority altogether reaches an extreme that you create the beginning or the end of a new wave pattern, and you start some kind of new behavior after that. So wave theory is about identifying the sort of price behavior and structure that represents a certain stage or type of mass psychology. And when that stage is finished, a new stage starts, and the stages follow in a specific kind of pattern, depending on whether you're moving impulsively with a trend or correctively against a trend.
All right. So Elliott Wave, pretty big topic, takes a lot of time to understand. In fact, you were telling me earlier in our previous conversation that, this is something that you got to master over years, not days, not months, not weeks. But there are some common mistakes that you've seen, and you sent me these common mistakes. In fact, these top mistakes that Elliott Wave traders, analysts make related to trading or analyzing Elliott Wave. And, there's five of them. So let's just kind of walk through each of these, starting with the first error, the first mistake that traders and analysts make, and that is a price degree error. Price degree. And you mentioned that it was a smaller degree pattern should not consume more price than the larger degree patterns. What do you mean by that?
I look at wave counts that people send me over the years, and this, along with the time degree errors, time is probably even more common, but degree errors have to do with allowing patterns that are supposed to be a smaller degree to take more price than patterns that are supposed to be a bigger degree. So let's say that you're in a trend that takes 10 years, and in that trend, let's assume it's an impulsive pattern, so you're going five waves up for 10 years. Anything inside of that five-wave move on a lower scale, moving down to the lower fractals, you don't want to have, say, wave one of wave three take more price than larger wave one of the entire pattern. So wave one is a year and 100 points. You don't want to have wave one of wave three taking a year and a half and 150 points. So it's very crucial. And if you don't follow these rules, there's no way your count's going to be right. So it's very crucial that you make sure that anything that's labeled a lower degree, because under wave theory, everything's stratified under different degrees. So you might have primary degree and cycle degree and intermediate degree and minor degree and so forth. So every degree that's higher needs to take as much time or more than the, sorry, as much price or more than any pattern labeled a lower degree. And on the other side, you can't have any lower degree pattern taking more price or time than a pattern that's labeled a larger degree. So that's sort of mixed it up there, but it's mostly we're dealing with price first. So specifically talking about price, you can't have a smaller degree take 10 points and a bigger degree take 9 points.
Okay, so just so I understand this, this is important because if you have a price degree error when you're analyzing a market and you're trying to trade it, this is going to be a problem when your count is off.
Absolutely. They're integrally related and essential. You can't have a good trade unless you have a good wave count. You can't have a good wave count if you disregard degree logic.
Sorry, Glenn, one more clarifying question. What we're talking about here is the top mistakes that Elliott Wave traders make. And so this analysis is applicable to both Elliott Wave trading, Elliott Wave analysis, and also Neo Wave trading, Neo Wave analysis, correct?
No, unfortunately it's not. No, virtually everything that we're going to be talking about today are all things that I've added to wave theory that make it much more scientific, logical, reliable. So, no, these are all advancements to wave theory.
All right, so the first error was price degree error that NeoWave or Elliott Wave traders make. Now we have mistake number two, time degree errors. And you put smaller degree patterns should not consume more time than larger degree patterns. So walk us through that one, Glenn.
So this is on the same in the same realm as what we just talked about, but this is from a time consumption perspective. So if you have wave one taking a year on a big degree, you can't have a smaller degree wave one or a smaller degree wave two taking more than a year. It has to be no more than a year, but preferably comfortably less than that, so that it actually qualifies as a lower degree. And I'd say from the degree perspective that proper adherence to this is almost more important than the price phenomenon, but they're both equally super important. But you just always need to make sure, as you're structuring a pattern, that you don't have smaller degree patterns taking more time than larger degree patterns.
So if I'm an Elliott Wave analyst, Elliott Wave trader, working your system, Glenn, and I have one of these time degree errors where my smaller degree pattern consumes more time than the larger degree patterns, what's the problem?
But there's no chance your count's going to be right, which is, you know, there's no chance that you shouldn't actually have the count, right? But it happens all the time. I mean, I see this all the time. It's probably the biggest mistake people make.
Yeah, that's probably not very good. So, you know, break it down for us. What's the practical implication of having the wrong wave count, Glenn?
Well, you'll end up believing things are going to happen that won't happen. And so you end up either wasting your money on the trade, or you lose a lot more than you expect, or, you know, things just don't go the way you're assuming they're going to go, because it's not going to happen the way you're assuming if your count is breaking these rules.
All right, that's helpful. So we've chatted about the first two, the price degree error, number two, the time degree error. And for the moment, we'll skip over number three, because I have a feeling that we want to talk about the time consumption error next. And we'll get back to the other one in a bit. So in a time consumption error, in a standard impulsive pattern, Wave two should never consume less time than wave one from beginning to end. And then wave four should never consume less time than wave three from beginning to end. Walk us through that one, Glenn.
Okay, so this is a super common problem. It's probably the most broken rule there is. It has to do with having wave two in a five-wave move take less time than wave one, or having wave four take less time than wave three. I mean, the rule is broken so often that most people aren't even aware that this rule exists. And a lot of it's just been passed down over the decades from, you know, bad information sources, people just not understanding this degree issue, not understanding how corrections work. Markets trend less often than they correct. They don't like to go somewhere for long periods of time typically. They like to go somewhere quick and then hang around for a while. So when you're in an impulsive pattern, if wave one takes 10 days, it's absolutely essential, no matter where the two-wave finishes, it could be higher, it could be lower, it could be sideways, that wave two takes at least 10 days, preferably more. So if you have wave two take less time than wave one, your count's either going to be wrong or you're in what's called a very rare terminal pattern. That's sort of an exception, which the listeners really shouldn't worry about. So just 95, 99% of the time, if wave two takes less time than wave one, your count's going to be wrong. And same applies to wave four. If wave four takes less time than wave three, your count's going to be wrong 95 to 99% of the time.
All right, so let's go back a step to mistake number three, and that is price consumption errors. And you mentioned that the standard impulsive pattern, that wave two should not retrace more than 61.8% of wave one, and wave four should not retrace more than 61.8% of wave three. Seems very specific. You know, walk us through that one now, Glenn.
Yeah, sorry, I was dealing mostly with time consumption, right? We sort of skipped this category. Okay, so in the consumption of price requirements, when you're comparing same degree patterns in an impulsive formation, wave two can't retrace too much of wave one, otherwise you're not dealing with an impulsive pattern. So if wave two retraces more than 61% of wave one, the odds that you're dealing with a 1-2 setup are, you know, getting very low, like 5 or 10, 15%. And if it goes past maybe 70% or so, it's pretty much out. If you're dealing with wave four in relation to wave three, and this is vertical price consumption, so if you measure it and do a percentage retracement, and wave four retraces more than 61% of wave three, for every percent lower, the odds of it being a real fourth wave get logarithmically less. So, you know, if it's 62%, 62.8 or 63, just to round it up, you know, it might drop to 25%. If it's 64, it might drop to 10%. I mean, it just gets very quickly impossible.
Now, Glenn, I mentioned before that these numbers were very specific. They actually have a root somewhere else. Aren't these Fibonacci numbers?
Well, they are. They are numbers, and that's the greatest and most useful application of Fibonacci is to impulsive patterns and how much the corrections can retrace of the impulsive segments, and how the impulsive segments relate to the corrections in time. It's very common for the corrections to take 161% of the impulsive waves. It's very common for the corrections to take 61 or 38% of the price movement of the impulsive of the impulsive waves. It's very common for wave three to be 161% of wave one, or wave five to be 161% of wave one, and so forth. So there's a lot of Fibonacci relationships that occur inside of impulsive patterns.
Okay, that's helpful. Now, I want to back up for just a second related to Elliott wave in general. And that is, my understanding of Elliott wave is that you have these, you know, five-three pattern that always shows up in a standard Elliott wave. Am I correct in assuming that, Glenn?
Well, this is another mistake people make, because In all the books I've ever seen, except for mine, they're always talking about this complete cycle nonsense. There's no such thing as a complete cycle unless you end it with the five-wave move or you end it with the correction. You can't start it with an impulsive pattern and finish it with a correction, because then that's going to be just one or two or A or B of something, and it's not the end of anything. So it has to be either the five-wave move is a cycle, you know, an impulsive pattern, or the correction is a cycle, and that's it. They're completely separate, and they can't be connected, because then it doesn't make any sense. So that's a mistake that all the other books in wave theory make. You should look at it as two phenomena. You either have the psychology in the market is that of a trending market, or it's that of a corrective nowhere, going nowhere kind of market. They're two separate phenomena, and they should not be combined together. Because the minute you combine them together, then you only have two parts of what needs to be a three or five part whole.
Awesome. Helpful. Thank you. Anything more to add to the time consumption error bit?
The time consumption errors have to do with making sure the second wave doesn't take less than the first wave, and the fourth wave doesn't take less time than the third wave. And that's probably, well, these two are for sure the most common problems, but number four, in my opinion, is the most commonly broken rule of wave theory. Now, it is a logical extension of wave theory, which is where NeoWave came from. It stood for Neely extensions of NEO, NEO, Neely extensions of wave theory. So this is an advance that I've, you know, brought to the field, but it is absolutely essential. And when you don't obey this rule, it's the primary reason why counts are so often wrong and have to be constantly revised and so forth. One of the sort of significant differences between my wave counts or my service and most people who do wave analysis is that I'm not constantly changing my wave counts. Like, I've had a similar count for the S&P now, I think since 2000, generally. That we've been in a corrective environment since the high in 2000. Some of the labeling of exactly where patterns finished and started and stopped hasn't been terribly clear, and there's been a little bit of flexibility in that, but I've been pretty adamant that since the high in 2000, we've been in a corrective environment and that it would last 20 to 30 years, which I predicted right in early 2000 or mid-2000 and through 2001. So that whole thing has continued, and this is despite the fact we've made all-time new highs and the market's moved dramatically higher in the Dow. Some of the bigger indexes haven't been quite as dramatic. But we've been in a correction since 2000, and that's going to continue to go on until this correction is over. It'll end up finishing much higher than the 2009 low, and could be a few years from now. That's all not completely clear right now. But these rules are essential for good wave counts that survive. You know, it's very easy to constantly change your wave counts, but if you're constantly changing your wave counts, that means you're constantly changing your mind, you're changing your forecast, you have to change your trades. It causes lots of disruption and problems and probably a lot of losses. So it's better to apply all these rules and have no idea what's going on than it is to not apply them and think you know and end up losing money. So, you know, my rules sometimes make it impossible to know what's happening because nothing agrees with all the rules, and so there's no way to arrive at a conclusion. And so you're left with just ignoring that market and doing something else. But that's good, because that means you're not going to be losing money on something that you have no idea what's going to happen. More often, though, with orthodox wave theory, the rule base is much smaller. It's much more flexible. It's not logical, in my opinion, at all. So you start making all these mistakes everywhere, and you're thinking you know, and you didn't know, and you're constantly revising your counts. And, you know, I see most of the people in my industry who do wave analysis, they're changing their counts all the time. I mean, I've had, all the time. I mean, it's just relentless, endless. So a good comprehensive rule base, which is what NeoWave is all about. NeoWave probably expands the rule base of LeoWave by 200 or 300% at least. So that extended rule base helps to eliminate the ability to make all kinds of personal judgments about what's going on, and it forces you to sort of deal with the reality that you may not know, or you do know, and it's pretty clear what to do.
Okay, helpful. I want to back up for just a bit. Curious, is it ever unclear what the wave count is to you, Glenn? You've been doing this a long time. Do you ever not know for sure?
Oh, absolutely. Happens all the time. Now, of course, it depends on the time frame. Like, if you go down to daily or weekly, I haven't even had a count on the S&P on a daily basis. I can't even remember for how long it's been, because structure has not been clear enough to produce daily wave counts, not even really weekly wave counts. I pretty much am forced to deal with monthly, which are still not good, and 6 monthly, which are sort of good. So wave structure has been very difficult to figure out now for the last 2 or 3 years in the S&P, and that's because my rule base is extensive, and it just, all the pieces don't come together and all the rules aren't being met, so I really don't know what's going to happen, and it makes it very difficult to predict, what's going to happen. So I have to sort of do other things and follow other markets to distract me until there's something that's more predictable. But I have had predominantly the same wave count in the S&P since 2000, the year 2000. And before that, I wrote my book in 1988. My first book, I think, was 1988. And I produced a wave count in that book that was more than 25 years ago. And that wave count is still accurate and in effect for over 25 years. So it's still very bullish, by the way. It was probably the most, not only the most bullish market forecast of all time, but it's been the most accurate for 25 years straight.
Wow, 25 years, long time, man. Thank you for sharing the knowledge, and that's why we're talking to you, Glenn. But let's go on to these other errors that is that are affecting Elliott Wave traders. We went through price degree errors, time degree errors, price consumption errors, time consumption errors, and here we are, number 5, the post-pattern behavior requirement. And you mentioned that it's logically derived from the other mistakes. When an old pattern completes, a new trend begins. The new trend must start with a move that is larger and more time-consuming than the prior counter-trend corrective rally inside the last correction. A little technical. Walk us through that one, Glenn.
Okay, well, this is a complete innovation of mine. It has nothing to do with the original wave theory, and most people are unaware of this, don't apply it, don't use it, don't understand it. This has to do with a process of analysis in which you don't personally decide you're right. The market tells you if you're right. It's like the market is grading your paper in school. So if you produce a wave count, say of a 5-wave move finishing over, a year's time, NeoWave requirements tell you, based on the structure, time, price, movement, everything of the actual 5-wave move, it'll describe the minimum future price time behavior that the market must produce to confirm that that previous assumption was correct. And if that doesn't happen, it means your analysis was wrong. So the market tells you if you did your homework properly. It doesn't depend on you what you think. It depends on behavior confirming it or not confirming it. And that, to me, is the greatest innovation of technical analysis probably ever, and especially with wave theory, because there's no other way to know otherwise. It's just your opinion against somebody else's, right? So if you can produce a wave count and then the market produces the behavior, the post behavior required to confirm that previous analysis, then you know you're right. And it becomes not an opinion-based process, but it becomes a verified behavioral confirmation process.
Okay, Glenn, we're getting a little in the weeds here, but help me understand just a little bit more on this post-pattern behavior requirement. Say I'm an Elliott Wave trader, and I'm looking at mistake number 5, and I'm making sure that my trades have fit the wave pattern, or walk me through that again.
Well, it depends on if you're talking about just from a forecasting perspective or a trading perspective. If it's a trading perspective, then you would enter before confirmation and you would put in a stop based on where wave theory tells you your stop should not be reached. And then you wait for this confirmation event. And if it happens, then you can lower your stop to where you got in. If it doesn't happen, then you have to get out. So let me explain the confirmation process so you understand, because I don't think you're really quite getting how this works. It all has to do with logic and degree. So let's say that you're dealing with a primary degree pattern, and below primary would be intermediate, okay? The degrees are not important. It's just I'm giving you a name that we can use so we can structure the conversation. So if you have a primary degree pattern, and in that primary degree advance, you have a five-wave move, and the fourth wave, which is a lower degree than the whole five-wave move together, the five-wave move together is going to finish one pattern of a larger degree. So let's just assume this five-wave move is going to finish wave one of an even bigger five-wave move, okay? So inside of that wave one, you're going to have your five waves. And wave four of that pattern is one lower degree than the entire five-wave move, which we're calling wave one. So the big wave one, as it ends, is 1 degree bigger than the smaller wave four inside of wave one, right? Okay, so to confirm that that analysis is correct, the beginning of a new larger degree trend, by definition, and based on rules number 1, 2, 3, and 4, that we